We're doing Me'in Yaakov, and we had seen about Rav Ami and Rav Asi, who were judging all day long, and then Rav Chiya bar Rav Midifti taught them about the importance of only judging till a certain time, not to spend their whole day judging. And coming off of that, the Talmud goes on and wants a more definitive explanation. Ad matai yoshevin bedin. We're on page Gimel, which is Daf Yod in the regular Gemara Shabbos. Till what time are the judges supposed to sit in judgment? Amar Rav Sheshet Atzman Sudar. Rav Sheshet says, till the time of the meal. They didn't usually eat a breakfast. They ate a brunch. And the first meal of the day was sometime within the morning hours. They'd leave by the crack of dawn to go out to work. So they'd eat their first meal somewhere around 10 o'clock in the afternoon, in the morning, which for them was after 4 or 5 hours worth of work. They'd start their work before sunrise. So Rav Sheshet says, till when do the judges convene? Until the time of the meal, which was like the first half of the day that people would work. Yes?
About if somebody starts working before sunrise, can he continue working? When does he daven?
That's a good question. They would daven out in the field.
Their
shuls were out in the field.
Is it possible, or would they finish what they were doing?
No, they'd usually stop.
Like from the first moment you could tell?
They'd stop to catch nades. They'd usually stop for that, yeah.
If you're in a tree, you can only see the first part of the
shiur. Oh, very good. Amar Rav Chama, Meyekira, what source indicates this concept? Tichtiv. The verse in Ecclesiastes in Koheles describes, Ilach Eretz, woe to you, the nation, Shemalkech Nar, that your king is a lad, he is not mature, V'sarayich Baboker Yochelu, and your nobles, they eat an early breakfast. Woe to such a city. Today we'd say the opposite, but in their days, if you were eating breakfast, that meant you were starting your morning off with a lavish meal. What kind of mifunuk, what kind of... How do you say mifunik in English?
Spoiled,
right. What kind of spoiled person is that? Starts his morning with a breakfast. In their days, that was abnormal. You'd go get some work done, then go eat a meal. What are you eating before you got anything done in your day? So the verse says, woe to a city whose king is immature and the nobles eat fresh thing, first thing in the morning. Ashrei Cheretz, praised is a country. Shemalkech ben Chorin, that their king is a free man, v'sarayich be'et yochelu, and their nobles eat in the proper time, b'gvura v'lo v'shti, with strength and not out of drinking and intoxication. So, what's the verse talking about? So, melech in Tanakh could mean a king, and melech could mean a judge. So here Chazal understood it to mean the judge. Woe to the city whose judge is a lad, he's immature, and the nobles eat early in the morning. Praised is a country whose king, whose judge, is a free man, and the nobles eat on time, explains the Gemara, bigvura, with might. What does it mean they eat with might? Bigvura shel Torah, with the might of Torah. They get up in the morning, they're learning Torah, they don't go and make their coffee first thing in the morning. First thing in the morning, they're learning. V'lo v'shtiyah shel yayin. They're not drinking their wine first thing in the morning. The nobles might be having a scotch first thing in the morning, having a beer first thing in the morning. No! That's what the verse is praising. The nobles who start off their day working in Torah. Tanu Rabbanan. So now the Gemara is going to discuss when is the normal time to have meals. And this Gemara has many halachic applications, because if we can understand at what time people ate their meals, so that will define for us many other relevant halachot. Some halachot, like the time we wait between meat and milk, revolve around the times that we ordinarily eat meals. So, the Gemara defines, Sha'ari Shona, the first hour in the morning, sunrise, Machal Ludim. That's when the cannibals eat. They eat first thing in the morning. Sha'a Shnia, the second hour, Machal Listim. That's when the gangsters eat. Shlishit, the third hour, Mahal Yoshim, that's when the people who have an inheritance. See, so the first three are not so praiseworthy. Cannibals, gangsters, and people who've inherited wealth, so they can afford to eat, they wake up late, and then the first thing they do is eat. So that's what we say, the third hour in the morning, those people who eat by 9 o'clock, There, they must have inherited a lot of wealth that they could afford to eat right then. Revi'it, those who eat between 9 and 10, that's machal po'alim. That's the workers. They've been working since 5 o'clock in the morning, and by 9:30 they're hungry, they stop and they eat. So that's the time they eat. Chamishit, between 10 and 11, machal kol adam. That's when the average person eats. Eini, is that so? Ve'amar Rav Papa Revi'it zman sudal kol adam. Rav Papa taught that the 4th hour is when the average person eats. The average person would eat between 9 and 10. Ela Revi'it machal kol adam. The average person eats between 9 and 10. Chamishit machal po'alim, between 10 and 11, is when the workers stop to eat. Shishit machal tandei chachamim. Those who are learning, they eat between 11 and 12. That's when they're hungry. The 6th hour of the day. And we're talking about a sundial, where you divide the day into equal parts. Mikan ve'ilach kizroi kevin lechemet. If you didn't eat by noon, if you're only starting to eat by noon, so then the food isn't going to be so beneficial for you. It's like throwing a rock inside your pouch. And now you guys already have this. We're on page 6. You already have copies of this. We're on the second line. Yeah, we're on the second line. Amar Abaye lo amran ela lotai midi betzafra. Abaye says, when do we say that eating your breakfast late after noon is worthless? That's assuming you ate nothing in the morning. Aval taim midi betzafra letlan ba. But if you had something in the morning, so then it doesn't hurt you to eat your breakfast after noon. So that's what the Talmud says in other places. The Talmud says that's what they used to do. They'd get up early in the morning, they'd want to go learn. So after davening, they'd have a bunch of crackers, so that they would have had pat shachrit. The Talmud says elsewhere that having bread in the morning, and bread doesn't only mean bread, it means any type of cake or cookie or bread, is very important. You want to be able to understand things, you want to be able to remain healthy. It says you got to eat some bread in the morning. And again, bread doesn't necessarily mean bread, it could be crackers or cereal. So the if it's made of it depends on how it's made, but the those who were learning Torah would grab a bite literally when they'd finish davening, and then they'd learn the rest of the morning, and they'd eat their breakfast. It's like 12:30, like after 12, after the noon time. The Talmud over here discusses that you're not supposed to say shalom in a bathroom or a bathhouse. Their bathhouses were very very unkempt. They were filled with the foul smells of sweat. Their bathhouses were filled with mold and filled with steam, and they didn't get aired out too much. So their bathhouses were really, really at least as foul as their bathrooms, which were also much worse than ours. So you're not supposed to say shalom in a bathhouse. Shemishum shenemar, for the verse says, Vayikra lo Hashem shalom. It says, he named Hashem shalom. That's one of God's names, peace. So you don't say the name shalom, you don't say peace in a defiled place. The Talmud said, if that's the logic, how can you say the word trusted? Dichtiv, as the verse says, Akel HaNe'man, God is called trusted. So maybe you shouldn't use the word trusted or emet in a bathroom. V'chitem ha'chinami, maybe you'll tell me, okay, fine, don't. V'amrav ha'bamasem ha'vcham b'gluy ha'marav shalim emar emanut ha'betek, say that's not so. We have a quote that it's permissible to say the word emanut, truth, in a bathroom. Hatam shen gufei lo ikri ha'chi. So the Talmud answers, God's name isn't truth. We translate that verse, God who is trusted, God who you can trust, but his name isn't trust, so you could use the word trust in a bathroom. But here, God's name is Shalom. The verse says he called him Shalom. So that's why there are those who say you shouldn't say the word Shalom in a bathroom. So some people swallow the mem and then. Halachically, we don't go with this. We say it's a nice, pious thing to do. It's not obligatory. The word shalom isn't Hashem's name. So where does all this come from? So the Maharsha quotes an interesting medrash. The medrash says that God asked the different traits whether he should create man. So the trait of kindness, chesed, said create him, because man will also do kindness. And then the trait of Emet said, don't create man, because he's a liar. The trait of righteousness said, create man, because he does righteous deeds. The trait of truth said, don't create man, because he's all about quarrels. So now we can understand. God has different terms that he uses to describe himself. Rachum, Chanun, Rav Chesed, Er Chapaim. Now, these terms are mutual with man. Man can also be Rachum. We can also be kind, compassionate, do good things, do righteousness. So the Talmud didn't entertain the thought that any of these descriptory terms were God's name. But when it comes to Shalom, so then Shalom is something that's unnatural for men. Our nature is to be competitive, our nature is to be quarrelsome. We say it's a godly trait to have peace. Sim Shalom, we ask God, make peace upon us, because it's unnatural. The nature of man is that he's not a peace-seeking creature. On the contrary, man is competitive. He's competitive with everyone, almost everyone, except his disciple and child. But even with his wife, even with his parent, even with his neighbor, even with his friend, the nature of man is to be competitive and quarrelsome, and so it's a godly trait, the trait of peace. So that's why the Talmud begins and tells you, you know, God's name is peace. So the Talmud says, wait a second, if you're talking about traits that are godly, that don't come naturally to man, so then the same should be true about truth. Because you remember, we quoted, we said, kindness says create him because man will perform kindness. Peace said don't create him, he's quarrelsome. Righteousness said create him, for he too will be righteous. And truth said don't create him because he's a liar. Human beings lie. So the truth is that it's not easy for us to connect to the truth. In everything we do, there's an element of falsehood. So that's why the Talmud comes back and asks, if the issue is this is a godly trait and not a human trait, so then truth should also be one of God's names. Answers the Talmud, truth isn't God's name. Truth is God's signet ring. The Talmud says in numerous places, God signs his name Emet. What is Emet? Emet is truth. That's God's signature. Now, the idea is a deep one. There are many applications to this idea. The simplest and most well-known is probably this idea that Emet spans the alphabet, right? Aleph is the first letter, Tav is the last letter, Mem is the middle letter. That's Emet. And only God's truth is completely spanning everything. Okay, so that's one understanding of this Gemara. And now we're entering a series of very, very interesting lines. We'll begin with two more minutes. You'll notice that for the next few segments of Talmud, we will have repeated quotes that go in this order. Rava Bar Machsa, in the name of Rav Chama Bar Gurya, in the name of Rav. The Talmud spends about two pages just quoting this series of quotes. Hanoten matana lechaveru. If someone gives a gift to his friend, tzarich lehodio, he has to let his friend know, I'm giving you this gift. That's a way of honoring him. If you just drop a gift by someone and you don't tell him who it's from, you might embarrass him. If it's charity, so then charity we try to give in a concealed fashion. But if it's a gift, so then a person prefers to know who he got a gift from. And if you tell him who gave the gift, so then you're happier with him, he's happier with you. You've promoted the relationship with the gift. That makes sense. So this is a concept we find in more than one place, that when giving a gift, one should identify himself. Shneimar, as the verse says, La'dat ki ani Hashem mekadishchem. God tells Moshe, I want the Jewish people to know that I am giving them sanctity. Is it an obligation on the one who gives it? It's a recommendation for the one who gives it. Tanya Nami Hachi. We have a Tanakh support for this. The verse says, "Ladat ki ani Hashem mekadishchem." I want them to know I'm giving them this holiness. Amar le'Hakadosh Baruch Hu le'Moshe. God says to Moshe, "Matana tova yesh li bevet kenazai. I have a very good gift for the Jewish people. I have it in my treasury." Bet Knazai means my hidden house, the house where I keep my hidden treasures. The Shabbat Shema, you know what that gift was? Shabbos. Hashem says, I have a hidden gift I want to give them. It's called, its name is Shabbat. Vani mvakesh litena liYisrael, and I want to give it to Israel. Lech vehodiyem. Go and let them know. So I want to borrow from something that Rav Soloveitchik wrote in order to understand this line in the Talmud. Rav Soloveitchik writes that there's a universal aspect to Shabbos. Technically, the Torah says God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. So just as the world functions with a seven-day work week, we have a seven-day week, so too the seventh day for rest should have been a universal concept. Why should only the Jews have Shabbos? If it reflects creation, well, God created a world. The Jewish people are later on in world history. Why didn't the world get Shabbos? Shabbos is reflective of the concept that God created the world and rested on the seventh day. So why is that solely a Jewish concept? Sir Rav Soloveitchik says that, in fact, God's original design, his original plan, was to give the world Shabbos. The whole world was supposed to get the Ten Commandments, says Rav Soloveitchik. The whole world was supposed to get the Ten Commandments. Think about what that means. Honor your father and mother. Thou shalt not covet, shalt not steal. Shabbos! The world was supposed to get the Ten Commandments. The nations messed up and they didn't merit getting the Ten Commandments.
Didn't we create the whole world Shabbos?
Interesting, right? So then Hashem sends Moshe to the Jewish people. I want you to know, I have this gift in my storage house. It's for you. I want you to know what I'm about to give you. And we're in the middle of the Gemara, and in the middle of the idea. We'll pick up here, Bezrat Hashem, next week.